Already, he's just such a charming and delightful character and just so fun to watch and to know. His story is really a lovely mirror of London fashion since the 1970s. And so it really is a lovely arc about the fashion industry told through Manolo and his shoes.
Fashion and culture journalist Dana Thomas reflecting on the new documentary about a man who might have done more to change the way we see shoes than any other. That, of course, is Manolo Blahnik. From Midori House in London, this is The Cinema Show on Monocle 24. I'm Ben Rylan. Also today, we'll visit a fashion film festival that's fittingly held in one of the world's most fashionable cities, Milan.
The Italian event, the Fashion Week, everything was very beautiful, very curated. But I think that we can open fashion to a different crowd of people, younger people.
And we'll touch down in Helsinki to review that city's international cinematic event.
The film scene in Finland was quite different, but to us it seemed that it was a little bit old-fashioned and based on the older attitudes of film aesthetics.
That's all to come on The Cinema Show on Monocle 24.
You'll excuse me, I'll be pillaging the men's side.
Okay. Oh my God. These are authentic.
With just a little help from Sex and the City, Manolo Blahnik has become one of the defining fashion voices of his generation. Far more than concocting creations and having them worn by the latest celebrity of the moment, Blahnik is the kind of designer who prefers to get his hands dirty, carving heels and stitching seams himself. The new documentary, Manolo, The Boy Who Made Shoes for Lizards, reveals the man behind the label as a playful master of the craft. He might take his art seriously, but he dare not take himself too seriously, or, as he says, he'd be finished. Dana Thomas is an author and contributing editor at T, the New York Times style magazine. She discussed the film with Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco.
To be a great designer, a great creator, you have to be interested in the world and in history and in people.
She was the product of him thinking, of him talking, of him putting together different bits of world culture.
He is the greatest shoemaker of the 20th and 21st century.
Are we on?
Yeah.
Don't tell me. All this nonsense? Oh, God.
When he was a small boy growing up in the Canary Islands on his parents' banana plantation, he would eat lots of Cadbury chocolates and then take the foil wrappers and fashion them into little shoes for lizards that he would play with in the garden.
Oh, that's adorable. Is he worth a nice biography of him? Does he have a nice story?
Oh, yes. Well, already he's just such a charming and delightful character and just so fun to watch and to know. I'm lucky to say that I know him. And then his story is really a lovely mirror of London fashion since the 1970s. He started his company in 1972 in Chelsea. He was living in Notting Hill Gate as part of the Notting Hill Gate set. One of his best friends and muses was Bianca Jagger, you know, when she was Bianca Jagger, Mrs. Mick Jagger. And that was fantastic. You know, this was even before Studio 54, and she would wear his shoes everywhere and they would go out on the town. And another one of his great friends and customers and muses was Paloma Picasso at the height of, you know, Paloma's fabulousness in the 1970s as well. And so, you know, you follow this era where he was making shoes for Ossie Clark and for Jean Muir and for Xander Rhodes. And so you see the clips in the shoes that he was making of that era. And then when he went to the United States in the 1980s, then you understand New York and Anna Wintour at Vogue and then into the 90s with Sex and the City. And so it really is a lovely arc about the fashion industry told through Manolo and his shoes.
Talking about Anna Wintour, she's one of the many guests, you know, talking about Manolo in the film. You know, quite a strong lineup. Can you tell us about some of the people that are talking about Manolo in the film. Is it a good selection also?
Yes, Michael pulled in all sorts of fantastic people to talk about Manolo and about fashion and about shoes. Of course, there's Anna, who they filmed at the Ritz in London in a way that is very human and very tender and very candid. I don't think we've ever seen Anna Wintour like this on film, and we may never see her again like this. And it's because of their long friendship and true friendship with her that she was just so open and heartfelt about Manolo and about his designs and his work. And then there's David Bailey, the photographer, who has been working with Manolo since forever, and he recalled great, crazy shoots that they did together. And Penelope Tree, the former model, and how she used to wear his shoes and known and loved him forever. It's a really lovely mix of people. The best, maybe, the best sort of snapshot is when John Galliano comes bouncing into the room and surprises Manolo. He didn't know that John was coming in. And you can see the complicity they have, the really close, fun relationship and friendship that they have together. You know, watching them just makes you smile. It's so warm and joyous.
On a film like this, is there space for criticism as well?
For criticism of Manolo's work? Yeah, I mean, Manolo is actually the most critical of his own work himself in the very beginning, when he said at his very first collection he didn't really know how to construct shoes properly. He had never studied shoemaking. He never set out to be a cobbler. And so they weren't terribly well made. I won't give away the story, but the models did have a difficult time walking in them. And it's a very delightful moment. You know, he was the first to say drawing shoes and making shoes were two different things, and he had to learn how to make them too.
We need to talk as well about the director, which is quite an interesting character, Michael Roberts. Tell us a bit more about him, and is it his first foray into film?
Well, Michael's a true Renaissance man. He paints, he takes pictures, he writes beautifully. He's an illustrator. He does it all. And when he worked for Vanity Fair, Tina Brown called him the Jean Cocteau of fashion. And I think that's a very fair assessment. And the one thing that was really missing from his oeuvre was filmmaking. He made a short film for Manolo, I guess it's been about 3 or 4 years ago, inspired him about one of Manolo's shoe collections that was very tango Argentinian oriented. And Michael made this short film with their friends Rupert Everett and Lucy Burley that was a passionate love story called Jealousy. And it was black and white and looked like a sort of silent picture from the 1920s or 30s. It had such a very cool patina to it, and the lighting and everything was just spectacular. Short film that you can see on YouTube. And then after that, he made a few more short films for and about Manolo, and that's when he decided that maybe there was something more here and that he could build it into a feature. So he proposed that to Manolo. Manolo said, sure, terrific, let's do it, except I don't want to be in it. And eventually Michael convinced Manolo to be in it too.
I'm very glad as well, because he seems like a character. Tell us, what's the appeal of fashion films? Because, you know, we've seen in the last decade or so, there's more and more of those. And I think it does bring a kind of a human touch to the fashion industry. I mean, that's my perception. I wonder, what's your view on this?
Well, it's interesting. You know, when I first started covering fashion 30 years ago for the Washington Post, the way you got an, you know, inside look at the fashion industry was by reading the fashion editors like Nina Hyde at the Washington Post and Bernadine Morris at the New York Times, their dispatches, their columns and their reporting from the shows and from studios and from couture houses really did, through words, describe what you saw. Then in the 1990s, there was this whole trend of shooting backstage to show the real life of what the magic was of the fashion business and of a fashion show. And so there'd be film crews and cameras, and there'd be all these sort of backstage shows, and you'd see the models getting made up and the fittings being done. Or we'd do stories in the house, couture houses, and show how they made the clothes. And that was very visual driven, but it was still, you know, either for television or print magazines, and was photography stills. The breakthrough, I think, for filmmaking was when the documentary Unzipped was made about 15 years ago, and it screened at Cannes and then later went to theaters. And it was very fun and showed that you could make a really interesting feature film about the fashion industry that sort of took all those elements of showing backstage and how things are made and who the characters are and who the players are and how much fun they're having doing what they're doing. I think that this is a descendant of that or along that line. And there's so many more now. There's one about André Léon Talley. I believe there's one about Karin Wojtfeld. I know there's one in the works right now about Alexander McQueen. It's a new genre. And I think it's because the audience for the fashion industry has gotten bigger as the fashion industry itself has gotten bigger. You know, it's grown into the luxury fashion business now is a $300 billion a year business now. It's an enormous global industry. And therefore, because you have more people knowing and buying the clothes, they also want to know more about who makes them and who designs them and how it's done and the world behind it. And so there is an audience, a very large audience for this genre.
From the last few years, do you have a personal favorite?
I think Michael's. It's really delightful. And I'm really looking forward to seeing it tonight again on the big screen.
Myths are created around people the way they have been around Manolo. And I think he doesn't really know how to deal with it.
I never had a kind of perception what fame or whatever or known is.
You had to show so much of yourself that you were not sure that the true self was still inside.
The author and journalist Dana Thomas speaking to Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Manolo, the man who made shoes for lizards, is out now. Still to come, we'll put our best foot forward in Milan as we pay a visit to the city's fashion film festival. But first, a look at this week's movie presses. The screen's original Wonder Woman, Linda Carter, took aim at director James Cameron earlier this week, labelling him thuggish following his repeated criticism of the recent long-awaited film adaptation. Cameron had said that Wonder Woman is a step backwards for portrayals of strong women on screen and compared the superhero unfavorably with the Sarah Connor character from his Terminator franchise. Carter took to social media to plead with Cameron to stop dissing Wonder Woman, calling him a poor soul who didn't understand the character that she's been embodying for more than 40 years.
You obviously have little regard for womanhood. You must learn respect.
And the London Film Festival is officially underway this week with the opening film Breathe, starring Andrew Garfield as an activist who changed attitudes towards people living with disabilities. It's also the first film to be directed by Andy Serkis. This is The Cinema Show. Stay tuned. Last week, Milan's catwalks were busy hosting the Women's Fashion Week, but away from the runway, there was plenty of activity on the big screen as the city hosted its annual Fashion Film Festival. Now in its fourth edition, the three-day event promotes short films and gives fashion brands big and small the chance to work creatively with both up-and-coming and established directors, showcasing visually striking stories that go beyond the clothes. We dispatched Monocle's Milan correspondent Ivan Cavallio to the event, where he caught up with the festival's founder, Costanza Cavalli-Etro.
Milan Fashion Week typically attracts crowds of onlookers outside the runway shows, all hoping for a glimpse of a celebrity or a model behind the velvet rope. That atmosphere of closed-off events for a privileged few was something Costanza Cavalli-Etro wanted to change. The globe-trotting Argentine, whose CV includes creating Mexico City Fashion Week and a Latin American film festival, saw an opportunity. In 2014, she started the annual Fashion Film Festival to coincide with Milan Fashion Week to help the industry reach both a wider audience and explore a wider range of issues using the language of cinema.
I wanted to create a very open, inclusive, democratic event within the fashion industry, the Italian event, the Fashion Week. Everything was very beautiful, very curated, but it was like not for many. All these very closed events, VIP events, but I think that we can open fashion to a different crowd of people, younger people.
Etro's formula is to bring together established fashion houses and new labels, as well as fashion publications, to commission short films by emerging talent and leading film directors. Screenings are free for the public, and viewers see commercially driven projects such as a video by Spike Lee for Italian luxury outerwear brand Moncler. Can you give me that sound beat? Climbing past heaven to even higher ground be. Next to more insightful pieces, such as New York-based Barbara Anastasio's The Way We Dress, Women in Uniform.
I've been in uniform about 9 years. very early, I noticed people noticing me on the street. It's pretty much become a part of who I am at this point.
Her award-winning short is a study on how women's daily uniforms shape their sense of identity and includes interviews with a New York City police officer and a nun. Mixing creative commercials for big fashion houses with independent artistic endeavors is a must for Etro.
All our screenings are made of these two realities. And something amazing is that when you see these two realities in the same screen, you notice that there's not a difference of quality, because creativity is not made of money, but it's made of good taste, vision, and sensibility. So it's very beautiful to notice that a young, unknown director coming from Finland can be next to Wes Anderson, and it's very coherent.
Etter was also happy to tackle hot-button issues of the day.
Civil rights, rights for people of color.
Not only a woman, but I'm also a minority.
We have this documentary that is called Women's March. That is the march that was made not only by women, but all the people that are filing and willing to change Trump's point of view regarding women. So I like that one because it's the march that was made in New York after Trump's election.
The role of women in fashion was central to this year's edition. Organizers paid tribute to Franca Solzani, the influential Vogue Italia editor who passed away last year, with the screening of the documentary about her life, Franca, Chaos and Creation. Then there was the Through My Eyes series, presenting 5-minute short films by promising female directors that portrayed female beauty using a mix of art house cinema and avant-garde techniques, like the short Sundowner by London-based director Marie Schuller.
Like clouds on a moody sky, an event started to take shape.
Unlike Fashion Week, which celebrates local designers, Etro is eager to ensure the festival is international in scope, attracting talent from around the world.
You get to know for 60, 80 minutes different cultures, different aesthetics, different languages. We have a fashion film from Brazil, from China, from Finland, Ireland. So you get a full immersion, not only in the aesthetic, but in the social, in the cultural way of life of these countries.
Ivan Cavaglio in Milan, speaking to the Fashion Film Festival's Costanza Cavalli Etro. This is The Cinema Show on Monocle 24. We will touch down in Helsinki next. On last week's edition of The Cinema Show, we heard from this year's winner of the Golden Bear at the Berlin Film Festival, Ildiko Agnetti. Right now on Mubi, you can catch the film that catapulted her to festival fame with the Cannes Camera d'Or winning film My 20th Century from 1989. And for something completely different, take yourself back to a time of escapism and the fluffy cinematic confection of Hollywood's golden age with the 1942 musical You Were Never Lovelier, starring Fred Astaire in one of his lesser-known efforts, not starring Ginger Rogers. Instead, there's the luminous Rita Hayworth, who, believe it or not, was also a very good dancer. Mubi is the curated movie site of cult, classic, and award-winning films. Sample a month of movies for free by heading to mubi.com/monocle. That is MUBI/monocle. The Helsinki International Film Festival celebrated its 30th edition this year with the theme Love and Anarchy. And with over 60,000 moviegoers taking a seat in the cozy theatres of the Finnish capital, the festival stayed true to its eccentric and avant-garde spirit with a standout selection of films. Our Helsinki correspondent Petri Bertsov sent us this report.
When the Love and Anarchy Film Festival was born in Finland's capital Helsinki 30 years ago, the mere act of showcasing independent movies from outside the Western mainstream was in itself an act of anarchy in the country. The small group of activists, who were at the time frowned upon for introducing Finnish cinema-goers to genres such as Asian gore or anime, could hardly have imagined that Love and Anarchy would one day grow to become Finland's biggest film festival. But has it become mainstream? The very thing against which it rebelled? Far from it. If anything, the audiences themselves have changed, and the festival can take credit for much of this change. A look at this year's themes shows that Love and Anarchy is still a breath of fresh air in the Finnish cinema scene dominated by major studios and blockbusters. Outcasts, hippies and wanderers. On the outside by choice or by force. Who am I? Who are you? The joys and sorrows of Generation Z. Wine, politics, phantoms and fantasies, a celebration of the new French cinema. Systems of order and structures crumbling into chaos. These are just some of the themes that the over 60,000 moviegoers enjoyed at this year's festival. The festival's artistic director Pekka Lanerva has been involved with Love and Anarchy since the festival's inception. He tells me how the organizers select the over 350 films being shown at the festival.
Well, we of course try to look at the film world from a little bit on our own perspective. That is, that we try to find films that would appeal to younger audience, to be at least really interesting movies. Some might look like really, really great movies, but then also we have a lot of documentaries and a lot of fiction films that treat a subject that we might think that that's so important, even that the film might be quite rudimentary. Usually they treat the life of young people and how to cope with the social situation where they live. And we also want to show the world as a really multicultural place, so we have film from all over the world, partly also because there's also a lot of audience that we have that are interested in different cultures. They are interested in the Japanese culture or maybe Latin American culture.
Pekka, what are some of the highlights in this year's festival?
Always difficult to say because we have 170 long feature films and then 190 short films on the top, so there's a lot of film to see, and it's been a long period programming all these. But of course you can find our like big gala screenings, like the opening and ending gala, and then our own local gala, and also Love and Anarchy gala, which is of course Yorgos Lanthimos' Killing of the Sacred Deer, film that got premiered in Cannes and is one of the most powerful films this year.
Yeah, I'm really sorry about Bod.
It's nothing serious.
No, it is.
Like we're the stars of the human race. Human race.
Where did you two go?
When the lights started out, they don't know what they heard. Strike the match, playing loud, giving love to the world.
How did his father die?
A surgeon never kills a patient. An anesthesiologist can kill a patient, but a surgeon never can.
Don't be scared, Mom. You'll see. You won't be able to move either. But to get used to it.
Where is she? What did you do to her?
We're gonna let it burn, burn, burn.
I don't understand why I should have to pay the price. Why my children should have to pay the price.
It's the only thing I can think of as close to justice. We can light it
up. And the name Love and Anarchy, I guess, speaks to the versatile nature and maybe the little bit of rebellious nature of the festival. Since it was born 30 years ago, Finland must have been, and the cinema culture of Finland must have been very different at that time. Maybe the name suggests some change that you wanted to introduce.
Yeah, of course, at that time Finland was so different. It's nearly impossible to imagine. One of my colleagues, one of the founding members, Matti Paunia, used to say that he thinks that at that time period, Finland was like an agrarian fascist regime. So there's been some progress after that. The film scene also in Finland was quite different. Of course, there was a lot of distributors, a lot of theaters running, but to us it seemed that it was a little bit more old-fashioned and based on the little bit older attitudes of film aesthetics. at the end of the 80s, there were so many film cultures that were not very popular around Europe, like Asian movies. There was a lot of young people working on the movies in Japan, in Hong Kong, mainly doing martial arts films and violent action movies. They were nearly regarded here as trash exploitation movies. Some of them were really banned in Finland. One of the main directors of the festival was Derek Jarman from England, and he was, of course, the biggest name in the gay scene on the filmmaking, and that was also one of the revolutions that we tried to follow. Films this year, one that I love really much, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. That was one of the most popular ticket sales on the festival right from the beginning.
Don't!
Hey there. You know who threw that can?
What can?
How about you, sweetheart? You know who threw that can?
No, I didn't really see.
Thank you, Mom.
That Love and Anarchy, with its quirky and offbeat selection of films, manages to attract tens of thousands of cinema lovers in a city of just 500,000, is testament to the enduring appeal of the cinematic art. Many of the films were accompanied by workshops and talks with the directors, which further emphasized the social role of the cinema experience. For Monocle in Helsinki, I'm Petri Burtsov.
Thank you, Petri. That's all for this week's program. Next week, we'll look at Nordic Noir and how it hopes to make a splash on the screen with the new thriller, The Snowman, starring Michael Fassbender. We'll sit down with the film's director, Thomas Alfredson. Today's show was edited and mixed by Christy Evans and researched by Yulian Goffin. The Cinema Show is back next week. I'm Ben Rylan. Thank you for listening.
Stepping out with my baby, I can't go wrong, 'cause I'm in right. It's for sure, not for maybe, that I'm all dressed up tonight. Stepping out with my honey, can't be bad to feel so good. Never felt quite so sunny, and I keep on knocking wood. They'll be smooth sailing, 'cause I'm trimming my sails, in my top hat and my white tie and my tail.